Welcome to Jeremy Chats with Coaches. Today I have Davidson Heng with me. Davidson, I would just like to start out by having you share with me and my listeners, who are you, who is Davidson Heng, and what drew you to coaching?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I started coaching, that's a good question. I would say what drew me to it was I grew up pretty poor, so I live off of government assistance, and I didn't really have a father around most of my life. He just left one day without saying a word. So I struggled with a lot of self-doubt, a lot of like imposter syndrome. And then I started listening to a lot of podcasts where coaches were speaking. And I was like, huh, who are these people? And some of them were like motivational speakers. And then I discovered like Tony Robbins. And I was like, man, these people are like really empowering. This is like totally different than the people that I surround myself with. And just fell in love with the communities and would travel and go to all these conferences. And I noticed as I started to work on myself, I started making more money and then just started being able to meet like really cool people and accomplish more. So that's how all of that started.
So tell me, what would you say is the core philosophy behind your coaching?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I have six different pillars that I focus on, but essentially what I believe is that there's three core moments that like one in our childhood, one in our teenage year, and one in our adult year that has made us who we are. And once we heal that, we're able to just have a lot more self-confidence. And I do think like our biggest weakness ends up becoming our biggest strength because we end up working on things that we perceive that we're not good at. So a lot of like the things that I think about or that I teach on is just like around healing the past and then just like doubling down on what makes you great, like your uniqueness, and then being able to bring levity and play to a lot of things that like our trauma. So that way we have like self-awareness so that we can work on just like improving some of our weaknesses, and then that would just help us be a lot more successful because not only are we not being as reactive, but we're able to choose instead of like just being unconscious to our triggers.
I love that. So looking at our greatest weakness becoming our greatest strength, what would you say was your greatest weakness that's now your greatest strength?
Yeah. I would say for me, I just thought I was like stupid because I just wasn't good at school. Like I was diagnosed with ADHD. So I just was not good at like memorization and like the traditional like stuff that you learn in school. I think I overcompensated by reading like 1,000 books, like actually stuff that I cared about, like biographies and just like motivational stuff. And it ended up being really good because I overcompensated so much that I felt like I learned a lot. And because I learned so much, I was able to accomplish a lot of things that I would say most people haven't accomplished in their lifetime, but I'm able to do at the
age. Cool. Can you give me some examples of that?
Yeah, close to 100,000 YouTube subscribers, publishing 5 books, 300 podcast episodes, getting into LinkedIn, which had over 1 million applicants. Yeah, just things that I never thought was possible because I just didn't have a lot of confidence growing up.
Okay, that's awesome. So yeah, it sounds like your greatest weakness in a lot of ways was a lack of confidence, and through your experience in self-development, that's become one of your greatest strengths. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's very, very concise or very observant. Yeah, that you that you noticed that. Yeah. It's
excellent.
I wasn't very confident. And I'm not gonna lie, sometimes I do, as I play a bigger game, as I go out and put myself out there a lot more, there's definitely times where I doubt myself, but I definitely feel like I'm able to accomplish pretty much like anything I put my mind to. But of course, like anyone else, I'm human as well. So there's definitely times where, you know, I fall short or I quote unquote fail, but then I'm usually able to see like the positive in every.
You weren't still going outside of your comfort zone. And every time you go out of your comfort zone, there's going to be a little bit of lack of confidence. If you weren't doing that, then you wouldn't be growing. And who would want advice and help from someone who wasn't growing themselves anymore? Because if you've already reached enlightenment, then you'd be in nirvana. You wouldn't be here on this earth anymore.
Yes, that's the goal.
That Okay, maybe I just could you maybe in one sentence try to sum up what is the core philosophy behind your coaching?
Yeah, okay, this would be an easier way to explain it. By discovering our blind spots, aka our disempowering narrative, we're able to build a more empowering narrative. And once we have that story, we're able to accomplish more, because I assert that most of us are our own worst critic. So once we figure it out, we're able to rewire our brain to be able to just have much more empowering thoughts and beliefs about ourselves.
So basically, it comes down to you did already say it actually pretty concisely. Our greatest weakness becomes our biggest strength.
Yeah, exactly.
So how does that translate into tangible results for your clients?
Yeah, so we I all of my clients, usually there's one glaring, it's a blind spot for them, right? It's always easier for us to see other people's stuff. A lot of the clients, it could be, hey, I didn't have a college degree, or I'm ugly, or I'm too short, or whatever disempowering narrative they have, right? Everyone has their version of that, or I'm weird, or I don't fit in, or I was abused as a child and no one loves me. So typically there's one glaring thing that shows up. It's pervasive. It shows up everywhere in life. And then once we are able to rewire and able to see, actually this is your biggest strength. And then, usually it takes a few sessions, right? Usually it's not the first conversation and they're like, oh my God, this is my strength. I'm going to double down on this. But once we figure out what that is, it's as easy as just rewiring it so that now they see that as their competitive edge.
I love that. That's what my coach did for me is took me from that I'm weird and I don't fit in, or I thought that was a weakness, to I don't know, there's a quote that says, "Why do you keep trying to fit in when you were born to stand out?"
That's good. I love that.
And so yeah, I feel like that's happened for me, that exactly what you've said. My greatest weakness I always saw as being weird and different. And now I actually do think of that as my greatest strength. So, yeah, I love that
That's
philosophy you've
amazing.
got.
Yeah,
So,
that's powerful.
can you maybe using an alias, can you share a success story of one of your clients that where your coaching methods made a significant difference in that client's life or career or whatever it was that they were working on?
Yeah, I'll just call him Uber driver. Right? I have a client who, let's just say he had a really tough life. His stepmom called him a worthless piece of shit that doesn't deserve to live. Just all kinds of names. He was abused. His dad hit him all the time. Just horrible stuff. I wouldn't wish upon my worst enemies. And obviously, it makes sense. He doesn't have a lot of confidence. Everything that he's been told, and just the hatred and the vitriol, and just the crazy stuff that he's been through. Reached out to me because I would be pretty open about my vulnerability, about my insecurities on Reddit, and he became a client of mine, and I was able to help him. Not only, I think at the time, as an Uber driver, he's making $36,000 a year, but after working with him on and off for 2.5 years, he was able to break six figures and get into Gartner, which is one of the top tech companies to work for, and became a top performer there. Obviously, that didn't happen overnight, but it really goes to show that despite all the adversity, despite all the obstacles, I was able to show him that he was resilient and creative, and he always went above and beyond because he felt like he had to do way more research and a lot more due diligence than everyone else, right? So he was extra. He always went the extra mile. So no, that's one of my most rewarding ones to think about.
Sorry, what company did you say he works for now?
Oh,
Gartner, and that's a tech company, is it?
yeah. It's one of the biggest tech companies, multi-billion dollar company. They do IT consulting, mostly. That's what they're
Okay.
known for.
And was that what he was aiming for when he met you, or was that something that he discovered that he wanted to do?
So I helped him move up. So this definitely wasn't an overnight thing. So I would help him get four promotions. He started off as an SDR, which is more of the entry level, getting into tech sales, and then continuously keep building up, and then move up to SMB account executive, and then mid-market account executive. So It was over the course of a bunch of different promotions and job switches, but every time it was $30,000 raise, $30,000 raise, $30,000 raise, and then, was able to make pretty good money now.
So what I was asking is, did he already know he wanted to go in that direction of working, or was he already working for the tech company? Or was
No,
that
no,
something where he's, I don't know what to do other than Uber driving, and he worked together and he found his dream.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. No, I think like most people, he wasn't really 100% sure, nor did he have the confidence to getting to the company of that caliber, like especially earlier on, right? He's just lost and he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do. And I helped him land like three different jobs. So every 6 months, like we would like reconnect and continue to work on it. So every time, but he wasn't sure. He just knew he wanted to be in sales, but wasn't sure like what company he wanted to work at ultimately. But then once we worked on building his skill set, he developed like more confidence. And then as he continued to develop more confidence, then he was able to finally interview a top tier company. But yeah, definitely that's not what he was thinking. Like he just wanted to break into tech sales, which was like a lot different than what he was doing before.
Okay, so maybe using him as an example, or just more generally, when you're working with a client that doesn't realize their own potential, how do you help them identify and unlock that potential that they don't even see themselves?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of curiosity. It's so there's a huge emphasis on the blind spots. So a lot of us have like unconscious narratives that we have that's usually we're just not even aware of it. So some of it is unpacking, hey, what happened? What led you to have these beliefs, right? So some of it is like a lot of healing work through some of the landmark distinctions that I learned from some of my training. Some of it's through Tony Robbins, but every client's a little bit different, right? But it's through a lot of a series of questioning because you never want to fish for them, right? You want to teach them how to fish. So just do like active listening and curiosity, you're able to ask questions and then eventually they have what I call like an aha moment. And then they're like, oh, like maybe I'm not such a worthless piece of crap. But that happens through building that trust, building that relationship. And then they start to realize, oh, like maybe I am capable of more than I had imagined. But usually it's like unpacking layers, right? Usually it's okay, what happened? Like why do you feel this way? And a lot of it's just like healing and then making amends as well, right? Some of it is just they did a couple of things that they're ashamed of, and by going back to the past and either apologizing for whatever happened with whatever relationship or whatever falling out they had, and then finally from getting those relationships good place, like they start to build that confidence and start to take responsibility, and then they're able to have a higher self-worth because they're able to see that, oh, okay, maybe I'm not a bad person after all.
Yeah, I love that. It's interesting because there's this tension for me between improving weaknesses and just focusing on strengths. But I think this is a good approach, an interesting approach to look at your greatest weakness being your greatest strength, because it's not that you're necessarily trying to improve your skills in that area. It seems more like it's realizing that's actually a strength, not a weakness. For example, being weird or different. It's not like you're trying to change that so that you're not weird or different. It's that you're trying to recognize how that can be a strength.
Yeah, it's like I just watched The Greatest Showman, or was it called The Greatest Show? The one with Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, I haven't
And
seen it, but yeah.
that's so good. So what he does is like he brings all these misfits together. He plays P.T. Barnum, right? The guy who started the circus.
Yeah.
And there's a really touching scene where he the they didn't necessarily like that there's all these quote unquote freaks. So a lot of the village people that were against all these burnt down the building, and then he goes wallows in misery, and then all of the circus, like the quote unquote weirdos, like they come up to him and say, hey, our parents were too ashamed to show us to the world, so they locked us in a room, but you were the first person to help us see that like we love ourselves, like we shouldn't be afraid, but actually we should cherish like what makes us unique. And I think that's like a beautiful like metaphor for the type of coaching that I provide, where it's like, hey, whether you're quote unquote like a super nerd and you go above and beyond and you're on Reddit 5 hours a day, hey, like the fact that you're able to have that much curiosity, the fact that you go above and beyond and that you do these things, or that you're laser focused on things, like that's a good thing. Or some people are like, they're just like, oh, I'm super nerdy. Nah, like embrace that, man. Like embrace, like if you're really into video games, then you should work for a video game company, right? So it's like what everyone else thinks is weird. Hey, double down on that. And once you find that thing that you really love, like it doesn't feel like work anymore because it's just like you just being passionate and you just like doubling down. But some people, they don't know what it is that they love, right? So it's like also asking them as well, when do you feel like you're in flow state? When are you the happiest? Like stuff like that. And then just by just curiosity, they'll realize, oh, like I never thought I could make a career out of that.
I know. I've talked about this on, I don't know if I talk about it on every episode, but definitely I've talked about this before, where what I love about coaching, when I did my coaching certification, it was Benjamin Harvey was the trainer, but it was a couple hundred people. So he had an assistant for every five people. And we had small groups of five people. But before he put us with those assistant trainers, he had them introduce themselves and say what they loved about coaching. And the one that ended up being my assistant trainer, she said, "What I love about coaching is that the client does all the work." And it's so true. And yet they don't know that they are. The more that you ask questions and get them talking, the more they think that you have given them ideas. And when you're like, "No, I didn't, all I did was ask questions." That was all inside you already.
Yeah, beautifully said. I think I'm not gonna lie, like during the early stages of my coaching, like I felt like I had to do work, but then I also realized, oh no, like I'm fishing for them. Like and then it's always so much better when you, and I think the best coaching is when there's like a long silence, like a really intentional silence. And that's really, and you can see them like working it out in their head. They're just like, they're really struggling, but then once they get that aha moment, they're just like, oh man, thank you so much for giving me the space. Like I really needed that. And thank you for having the patience to work that out with me. And it's just from our being, like nothing we're saying is more important about the being and the presence and less in the words that we're using.
And the curiosity, as you said, there's something about having another person there who is curious enough to ask those questions and to go deeper and deeper that brings so much more out of you than when you are just trying to, journal or try to think about it on your own. So yeah, there's something magical about that.
Yeah, just holding space for someone as well. It's sometimes like people, it's not like they don't know, but it's, I think we get influenced by what other people want or societal expectations and standards. So it's hard for us to get rid of the noise because like social media says something, or our managers or our parents want something. So sometimes it's just providing that space and just being with someone and like just the energy they can feel from you and just letting them know, hey, it's okay. What you're thinking is not weird. And just to normalize it as well, because a lot of people think they're like, oh, I probably sound like a crazy person. No, you don't sound like a crazy person.
You're saying the same stuff to me that all my clients say to me, but they don't say it to anybody else. So you think it's just you thinking that. So what are some common challenges that you're, well, actually, let me ask you, who are your clients? Who's your niche? Who do you work with?
Yeah, I call them like humble high achievers. So people that are like on the outside have all the external, like I guess you can call it extrinsic motivation. So like they win all the awards, like employee of the month and all that, but they feel like something's still missing. And that's because like their whole life is focused on like winning all the awards and more of the extrinsic stuff, or what the company wants them to do, what their spouse wants them to do. But they're like, man, like when have I ever actually focused on what and actually was intentional about what I wanted to do. So I call them like humble high achievers that are looking to develop their like internal scoreboard.
That just to go into a dark place for a moment, that reminds me of a kid who committed suicide at my school when I was in high school. And basically, I didn't know him. I didn't really know him at all. I knew of him. Everybody in the school knew of him because he got the highest grades. He was in all the sports and band and all the activities, and he was the best at all of them. And my assumption by the fact that he ended up committing suicide is that everything was extrinsic. Everything was for other people. He was achieving all of this stuff, other people and the outside accolades. And he wasn't following his true passion. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's tragic. Yeah. Mm. And this is common with a lot of like Korean and Japanese culture, right? You always hear about this like famous celebrities who end up committing suicide because they get all the awards, they go to the top universities, they win like the Academy Awards and Oscars and stuff like that, or the Korean equivalent. And some of them do end up committing suicide, right? Mm. And some of it's also because of the shame, right? Because they do have a big shame culture where like these actors and actresses have to be all perfect, right? And they can't mess up. And then like, as soon as like they mess up, everyone just like shoots like all this hatred towards them. And then they end up committing suicide. Yeah. It's like tragic. It's like these people who, I mean, people are human, but like, even if you're an actor, you're still like allowed to like mess up every once in a while. Right. It's like, man, like, yeah. And we just need to be more compassionate. Right. It's like, they have so much pressure already.
Yeah, I was watching an interview with Billie Eilish where she was talking about how affected she, I think she, maybe she stopped looking at social media, but she used to be really affected by all the negative comments and trolling. And there was one particular thread where someone was saying nasty things about her. And then somebody, I think, was defending her, saying I shouldn't be talking like that about a person. And then the person replied, oh, she's rich and famous. It's not going to affect her. People just, yeah, they don't understand that these people are still real people with real emotions and an ego that can be bruised and all of that. And yeah, I listen to a lot of comedians and their process, and it seems like most of them, they're working, they want to get up. At least the old thing was get on Johnny Carson on the Tonight Show and then make your own special and then do a show, a sold out show at Madison Square Garden. And they get to that point and they're like, still not happy, and I've sold out the entire theater at Madison Square Garden. They're all there to see me, and they're all laughing except that guy in the third row. He's just not laughing. Why don't my jokes go over for him? That's all I can focus on. So yeah, it really is. Yeah, it's all about doing what makes you happy, not trying to match the expectations of everybody else and do this, look for this extra way of being happy.
Yeah, I would go as far as like the actors and comedians and all of them actually are the ones that are the most like extrinsic motivated, right? Yeah. Because like normal people, we don't necessarily need a million followers or to be happy, but I get it. It's addicting to like continuously to get to be on like the morning TV and to feel important. Tony Robbins says like the six human needs, like, and significance is one of the six human needs. Like, those are the people that they need the validation. But Tony says, if you want to shift to like a happier, more fulfilled life, then instead of needing significance and security, love and contribution is actually what humans want. So it's a simple mindset reef, but it makes, you know, such a huge difference.
Yeah. And that makes me think about my uncle too. My uncle was a big politician in my home state, and he admitted that he needed that validation of winning a majority of the votes, that popularity contest.
Yeah, we've all been guilty of it. I'm not gonna lie, it feels nice to have this many subscribers or to be quote unquote like win LinkedIn top voice awards. Like, it feels nice. I'm like, oh wow, like I've made it. But then to go on to the next one, or we compare ourselves to others where I had a call with my coach, and he's very successful. I think he has 80,000 LinkedIn followers. And when he posts, he'll get 1,000 likes like per post. And then I'm not gonna lie, I told him like, hey, sometimes I do compare myself to him. And he's, yeah, but I've been doing it a lot longer. And he's, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you're really good at that I'm not good at. So it's just not healthy to compare like that.
Yeah. What about your clients? We've talked about this a little bit, and you can continue on this line that we've been going, or if there's something else you want to mention, what are some common challenges that your clients face, and how do you guide them through those obstacles?
Yeah, there's a framework. Yeah, so there's a couple frameworks that I like choose to focus on. So maybe it'll be helpful to go through some of these pillars. One is called like legacy crafting. It's simple. It's just like writing our eulogy, because like a lot of people aren't really sure what they want to do. They're just like doing things because like their parents, or they just haven't put the thought into it, right? They're just like, and then one day they wake up and they're like, I'm at a job that I hate, in a career that I don't necessarily enjoy. And it's like, oh, because you never really took the time to like actually write down like everything that you want to accomplish. What is your legacy about? What do you want people to remember you? And who's doing the eulogy? And just that simple exercise just helps them be able to focus on what really matters. It's very simple, but not a lot of people have done that. And maybe some people are afraid, right, of doing that, but it's just, and then we just reverse engineer what that looks like based on what they write and the emotions and the feelings and the people that are there at their funeral. So it's just a bit more intentional when you write all that down.
It is. It's amazing how simple a lot of the stuff that we do is. And yet, you can read a self-help book and you can do this stuff on your own. And some people are successful at that. But it's amazing how much, even though it's simple, it's just so much easier when someone's there with you, guiding you through the process than it is to do on your own. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, but something about that curiosity that I think.
I think it's because it's always easier for us to spot other people's stuff, blind spots, but it's a distinction that I learned. It's called what we don't know, we don't know. So it's like when we draw a pie chart, it's like what we know is like what we know, let's say 5% of the pie chart. And then there's so many things like we don't know. So it's like 90 something percent. And then, but then if you think about it, what we don't know is still what we know, which is like what we can imagine. So at least we can vision it, or we can see that this is something, but it's just, oh, maybe I can just learn it via reading our podcast or whatever. And then what we don't know, that's a whole world of possibility, right? But if that's the trick, we don't know, we don't know it. So when there's another human being, they're able to see it. Because like sometimes it's like things that we take for granted. Let's say like I'm really good at like just taking action, but for me it's like I just do it, so it doesn't feel like that's like my superpower. But then everyone else around me can see it, because they're like, nah, Dave said like you just take action, like you're really good at it. And then so that's why, because it's like I just unconsciously do it. So for me it's just like just me existing, but for other people they're just like, nah, like that's definitely something that it's like very special, very unique to you. And I only know this because I asked 50 people, hey, what are my strengths and weaknesses? So after you hear it 30 times, you're like, okay, like that's enough data points. I think that's probably one of my superpowers.
And you get in a certain frame of mind, particularly if you're depressed, which sometimes people are when they come to us, because look, actually, when I first went to a coach, I had seen a psychologist for a while, and that helped me get from negative to zero. I was no longer mentally ill, but I wanted to get from 0 to 10. And that was what I was still missing, was that direction. And that's what the coach helped provide. And the thing is, when you're at that low point, you end up having blinders on. So it's not only that blind spot that you might always have, but when you're at a low point, you're like a horse with blinders on. You can only see one, you can only see your problem, and you can't see, you might see one possible solution to it that you think is not possible. And there's actually all these other different possible solutions to it that you just can't even see. And yeah, when you have someone with you who's curious and asks questions, all of a sudden it opens up your eyesight, that third eye.
That's a really good point, right? Like when we're stuck in our muck, or we're just laser focused, because whatever we focus on becomes our reality, right? So let's say we're surrounding ourselves with like also negative Nancys, or just people who just are always complaining about work or whatever it is. Like people are just complaining about life all the time. Then yeah, of course, like I'm gonna hate my job too, right? Because like everyone else is just talking about how it's like the same. There's certain companies where I talk to people like the same exact company, but you talk to five different people, and there's five people that like hate their jobs. Oh, this company sucks. Like everything about it sucks. My manager sucks. My life sucks. And at the same exact company, same title, you talk to five other people, but those people are like, oh man, this is my dream company. I love it here. My manager's amazing. And it's the same exact role, same exact company, but why is it such a different thing, right? And it makes you wonder, oh, am I hanging out with the right people? Maybe I should hang out with people who are like super jazzed up about their lives instead of people who always are talking about how this company is like the bane of their existence.
Yeah, I always apply the 80-20 rule to, and I'm not saying that the numbers are accurate, but I always apply the 80-20 rule to anybody in any work position. I feel like 80% of people are there because it's a job, they've fallen into this job, or they, like you said, their parents or their spouse or somebody else has convinced them that this is a good job. And 20% of people there are actually passionate and they're actually in the right place. And then, so I feel that way about therapists and counselors and coaches and everything as well, where people will say, I've tried a psychologist, it didn't help, or I've tried a few psychologists, it didn't help. So that's probably because you got the ones who are just going through the motions and you need to actually find the right one. Same thing with coaches.
Or like you said, like I think we just have different, we vibe with different people. So yeah, you just never know, right? But if you try enough coaches or enough therapists or enough, you'll eventually find one that you click with and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. And that's the whole idea behind this podcast is, yes, obviously anybody can listen to it for free and glean a whole bunch of information from all different kinds of coaches on self-development of all different types. But some of those people will hear someone that they really click with just from hearing that person on the show and the kind of your conversation, and they'll contact those coaches and find the coaches actually lead them forward. I guess I want to wrap up, and then I'll get you to pitch, or not pitch, but let us know where people can find you. We'll do that in a minute. But first, I'll finish up with these two questions. And these two questions are a summary, or not really a summary of what we talked about. They're actually just checking if there's anything that we missed. It's perfectly fine for you to say no on these questions, but it's also perfectly fine if there is something that you want to explore with these questions. The first one is there anything that we started talking about that you didn't get to say as much as you wanted to because we went off on a tangent, headed off in a different direction?
Oh, no, you're pretty thorough. Yeah, I think this was a really good conversation. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. Okay, so the last one then, is there anything about, obviously, I'm just meeting you today. Is there anything about your philosophy and your work that I didn't even know to ask, so it didn't even come up, that you think would be a glaring omission in the life and work of Davidson Heng? Is it Heng or Hong? How do we pronounce your surname?
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty Americanized, so I say Hang, but I think,
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
technically in like China, I think the other way that you pronounced it is like how you're supposed to, but
Let's say
I'm like
Heng then,
super
if you
American.
say Heng. Okay.
I say
So
Hang.
is there anything about you, your philosophy, and your work that would be a glaring omission in a discussion of who Davidson Heng is as a person?
Yeah, I guess the last thing I would like to say is, I've been fortunate enough and that I've have spent way too much money, have hired way too many coaches. I spent over 150,000 and just soul searching. So I've gone to so many seminars, read almost 600 books, and got certified in every coaching certification, and was obsessed about it. So basically the program that I created is a combination of what I liked about each of these different modalities. So it is someone who I would like to think that I've spent over 10,000 hours just like really trying to analyze and just seeing what's best. I'm very proud that I was able to take this journey and really be able to compile it into like a mastermind program that is able to add the most value just based on my observations of just experiencing a lot of different types of coaching myself.
Excellent. Let me ask you this. Let's forget about the process and for just one moment what your program includes in it. And instead, just tell me, what is the result that someone will get when they have gone through your program?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say have boundaries, right? Because a lot of the folks that I work with are recovering people pleasers. So being able to have boundaries to develop their internal scoreboard, which just leads to having a job or career that brings them fulfillment, Some of the results are starting your own podcast, publishing a book, starting a YouTube channel, like doing things that they were afraid of, but they're actually taking
Yes.
action towards it. And some of my clients have also found the love of their life and have
Oh.
ever finally got married because they started loving themselves. And just because they're loving themselves, they're able to attract like the right type of person in their lives as well.
All right. So what I'm hearing is that when someone has been through your coaching, they are able to find themselves and start being themselves instead of what everyone around them wants them to be. And because of that, they're going to be successful in finding the type of career that they're actually passionate about, the types of relationships, and maybe whatever it is that they're looking for, they're going to be finding those things, but based on the fact that they are now living as their own true authentic self. Does that sound correct?
Boom. Very great summary. I love that.
Awesome. It's recorded if you want to steal it. That's fantastic. So if someone listening is thinking, oh my God, I need to talk to this Davidson Heng, how do they find you?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, I'm all over social media. It's pretty hard to miss me.
What's the best way to be able to end up getting in actual contact with you?
Yeah, I'd say my website, Davidson Heng. I'm also super active on LinkedIn.
Is that DavidsonHeng.com?
Yes.
DavidsonHeng.com. Perfect. And you're super active on YouTube. That's fantastic. All right. Well, they can obviously, if they're in this place where they still want to just find out more and more information, they can find you on YouTube and whatever, but straight to your website if they're ready to start taking action. Anything else you'd like to add before we close?
No, thank you so much, Jeremy. This has been a pleasure. Yeah, I love the consistency of the podcast. Podcasting is like one of the best mediums, and I'm just happy that I had this opportunity. And yeah, I know that you'll continue to make a difference with a lot of people through providing space for a lot of other coaches to be able to share their work, and the impact that has is exponential. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Davidson. We'll talk to you again soon.